It's a great honor to speak with you this morning, and how fantastic it is you're going to be in our neck of the woods at the Gleam Amar Center for the Arts at Madisonville Community College.
We're thrilled about it, too.
It's a beautiful hall, I'll tell you up front. And I'm hopeful that you'll tell me more about your brand new release. I'm assuming that you're going to sing from that wonderful release at the Gleam Center.
We just back in from a long weekend of work out to the Midwest. And, you know, for the first time, we really concentrated on that new material on stage. We brought all these songs from the CD onto the stage. All four of us in the group, Linda and me, Chris, the fiddle player, Jim, the bass player, we all were excited about how well it was received and how much fun these songs were to play. And yes, you're right. We will be concentrating on the material from this new CD when we get to Madisonville on Tuesday.
Well, tell me about the making of the CD, because it's all you except for Hank Williams, Joni Mitchell, and Bob Dylan.
pretty high cotton there. We're keeping it's, you know, this is our 40th year, 2013. We started in 1973 as, you know, wanting to make a life in music, and we've done that very thing for 40 years. So we wanted to commemorate that in some way, and we didn't want to do kind of a, we weren't really interested in doing a retrospective of just dredging up like sort of our, you know, some of our best known songs and doing old, you know, putting those old recordings onto a compilation or anything like that. We had the idea of going back and looking at our catalog of songs, especially the older songs. We kind of put a cutoff date from the newer Red House releases, but going back further than that and finding songs that had sort of gotten lost in the shuffle somehow. Either they didn't quite make it in the studio, maybe, you know, just budgetary or time constraints, or the song was too new or something, and it just didn't come out the way we had envisioned it, or it just never really worked into our sets and didn't work for us on stage. And so they just were songs that were just kind of forgotten. And there were a lot of those songs, and we culled through them, and we ended up with the 11 songs that are ours on the record. And then the three covers of Bob Dylan, Joni Mitchell, and Hank Williams were just people that have they've always been there in our musical lives. You know, before we knew one another. I'm from Alabama. I've heard Hank Williams' music from when I was a child. Everybody that was on the radio down there all the time. And I saw Bob Dylan live, and I saw Joni Mitchell live while I was still in high school in the early 60s. And, you know, they made profound changes in the way I looked at music and possibly my life and what I wanted to strive for. So
let's say that as we were looking at this material, we also had to feel as if we had an emotional attachment to these songs at one point or another as we were coming along. That was important as well. And some of this material is from our first record 40 years ago. So we had not, it's like learning new songs. We have completely new outlooks on them. Several instances, if I sang the song originally, well, Linda will sing them now. And so we wanted to for this CD to, even though some of this material has been around for a while, it's basically brand new material.
Yeah, very fresh. Fresh looks at everything.
We have a completely fresh new look at them. Some of these songs have never been in a digitized format. They are, you know, they were recorded on vinyl years ago and haven't seen the light of day for years and years and years.
We did it very fast in the studio with Jim Rooney as a producer, and he's just a terrific producer, and he likes to work fast. You know, we did the whole thing, recorded and mixed and everything in about 4.5 days, and never went back and changed anything. He always says if he was an artist, he'd be a watercolorist because he likes to work fast, and we do too. We're performing artists. We work best when we play live as opposed to trying to overtrack and overdub and things like that. So he was excited about the way it turned out, and we're still really, really happy with just the general sound and feel of the recording.
And Jim Rooney is such a legendary character. I mean, you know, he's responsible for the careers of Iris DeMent and, gosh,
Nancy Griffith.
You know, he recorded her first few songs. I mean, her first few albums. He's worked with John Prine. I mean, he's just a legendary guy, and he knows so much. And he came up to us at the end of this, you know, and he just said...
Of this recording, yeah.
Yeah, of this recording. And before we'd even come home, he was saying to us, that, you know, guys, I don't know if you know it or not, we've done something really special, is what he said to us. And at that time, okay, we were just too close to it. We had just been involved in all the nuts and bolts of making sure we sang right and that we got the arrangements right and that we got everything mixed right, and we were too close to it. But somehow or another, he was able to, through his experience, see that we'd done something really good. And as time has gone on, we think he's right. We think we came up with something really good. We're really pleased with how this record came out.
I'm amused that critics are saying that you are Americana, but you were Americana before Americana was.
Well, I agree with that because, there was a long period in our lives when we didn't have a category that people could put us into. You know, we weren't bluegrass and we weren't your quintessential singer-songwriters and we weren't your quintessential old country music band. You know, we were something in between it all and a part of it all. That's the way we were at the very beginning, and then all of a sudden here comes this term Americana and in the 90s sometime, and we thought, well, if there's a niche that we belong in, I guess that's it.
You said something the other day about, you know, taking a lot of genres and sort of forming it into a personal style, and I think that's definitely what I think we've done, if that's America. And it's all American music, of course, you know. I mean, we love British Isles music, and we know that a lot of American ballads come from British Isles music, but most, you know, we're a Southern-based band, you know, and we like the music from around where we're from, but a lot of different kinds of music from around where we're from. That's where we have stepped off of musically.
How often do y'all get around Mr. Keeler?
Not as much as we used to.
Do a few times a year. You know,
two or three times a year. We just went on an A Prairie Home Companion cruise to the Mediterranean, so that was 10 days out on the seas.
Still do occasional touring with him and end up doing a couple of radio shows a year and, keep in touch. We've been friends a long time as well as sort of, you know, musical associates. Done a lot of singing with him personally and started back in the late 80s doing some things with Mr. Keeler and also a woman named Kate McKenzie as the Hopeful Gospel Quartet. So mm-hmm. We have a lot of musical ties that go back a long way with Garrison.
He's been a good friend and a great supporter, Robin and Linda, and we're grateful for you know, the many lessons we've learned from him. You know, people, they think of the advantages of just being on the radio show in front of 4 million people a weekend. But the things we've learned from Garrison transcend that. He's very important in
our writing. And
that's how important it was to treat our craft seriously, you know, because we got to see how seriously he was taking his work. And that if you get a chance to do this make this kind of life in music, if you get a chance, then you better just really work hard at it because you can lose it if you don't. We learned that lesson many years ago by watching Garrison and taking seriously the fact that we want to be musical and recording artists and that we had an opportunity. And
there's a responsibility that comes with that really made us understand, you know, that you step up and you make sure that you're ready when people come out to see you and when people take a chance on you. You entertain them and you give them your very best.
One of the quotations from publications who are writing about you and your new release say that, this is from Music Row, it made me laugh, half of the hacks on Music Row should sit at this act's feet for songwriting lessons.
Yeah.
This is the legendary thing.
I don't know about that. I don't know. We write for ourselves. It's just kind of become what we do, you know. I mean, and if we don't write, then we start to feel like we're not doing something right, you know. So we write for ourselves, and so that we have a voice, and so that we have songs that are personal, you know. But and we've always though loved other people's writing too. I first started writing with Robin. He was such a good writer when I first met him, and I was wanting to be able to write, and he said the first thing you need to do is learn to recognize good writing, and so that was a really good tip. I think I've done that, and I think that in terms of like writing songs that a lot of people want to record, I wouldn't say necessarily that that's been our forte, although we've been lucky. I mean, we've had people you know, there's a handful of songs that have been recorded by lots of people. Amy Lou Harris has recorded a song, and Mary Chapin Carpenter, and Mary Black, the fabulous Irish singer. Tim and Molly O'Brien have recorded our songs. We've had some really what we would consider, you know, stellar artists choose to put something that we've written on a record, and that's pretty exciting.
And to just kind of combine this question with the previous one about Garrison, you know, Garrison told us years ago, I mean, one of the things we learned from him was that the more personal it becomes, you write, the more universal it becomes. And that's what Garrison does, you know. He writes from a personal point of view, and yet it's all universal, you know.
All human beings go through pretty much the same things in their lives, and so it's...
Identify with it.
Okay.
If you can connect with it.
Tell me this. You two wrote this song, The Old Familiar House on Christmas Day. Paint the picture of when that song came together for you.
Well, now that was the one new song, and we actually wrote that about a year ago, and we just liked it so much. It had never been recorded, and so we wanted to put it on the record. But it was started off as being kind of a song that I started as thinking back when I was a kid, and we were from the South, but we had moved up north. We were living in Michigan. We were the only members of either side of my father's family or my mother's family that moved away, and so we were always the ones that came back, and you know, for Christmas and summer holidays and any of those holidays. And there was just such a feeling about just trying to get that last day of school done and get out of town and get back to the family. And so that's basically where that came from.
I love the tension, though, in the fact that you are actually leaving home to go to an old house.
Yeah.
Leaving your own home to go back home.
Yeah.
Basically, because that was what we did, yeah. Living in Michigan was a lot easier. I think it was a lot easier as a kid to move up there than it was as an adult, you know, because they had never been in cold weather before. They had, you know, we had little coats that we thought were our warm coats that were just, you know, laughable when we actually got up there in a real winter situation. They never lost. They had very thick Southern, you know, accents, and particularly my mother from Alabama, and they never could lose them. And my brother and I worked real hard to try to lose them because some people wouldn't laugh at us. But, you know, they always kind of felt displaced, and even though that was our home, you know, and that's where our immediate family lived, it was never home to them, you know. I have to say, I don't think, you know, home was always back home, you know, back to Alabama or Georgia.
You know, I love the line, God bless the glorious cacophony.
That was a big word for us to use, cacophony.
I had this one uncle in my father's family. Was a pretty big family, and it would just be this little, you know, little kids running all around, and you know, people clanging in the kitchen, and just this, you know, it was a huge uproar going on all day long, getting this, you know, the Christmas dinner together. And I had one uncle who had hearing trouble. He had hearing aids. He would sit in his one chair and turn off his hearing aids and read the paper, and like nothing was going on, you know. And so I was trying to somehow get that in the song, but we never did get my uncle in it, but we did get the cacophony in it.
Well, I enjoyed it very much.
I love it. I think I just love singing that song.
You two probably have to go, and we're going to scoot here pretty much, but congratulations on what you did with Urge for Going, Linda. It is just
thank
beautiful.
Thank you. I love, you know, as I said, I saw Joni Mitchell early on, and I've loved that song for years, and it was sort of a daunting song to try to perform, but I came up with that little Klawhammer banjo accompaniment that somehow made it right for me, and I felt this is me singing this song and not me trying to copy Joni Mitchell. I love singing that song. It's one of the richest lyrical songs I know.
It's a goosebump
it's a
song.
Treat to sing it.
Well, thank you very much, both of you, and again, I think you'll love the house at the Gleeman Marr Center for the Arts, and they will certainly love you.
Well, we can't wait, and you've made us be even more excited about it. I'm glad to hear what we're coming for.
Nice talking with you.
Same back. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Kate.